Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Jacked ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
June 18, 1989, the Spectrum Sports Arena in Philadelphia, the second stop of the Budweiser Superfest Tour. On stage, before a crowd of over 10,000 people, Kool Moe Dee lights up the stage. While backstage, the members of Guy are getting ready for their set. Damian Hall huddles up with his brother Aaron and with Teddy Riley.
And I will never forget. Never in my life will I forget this moment.
Damian's got to admit that last night, New Edition blew them off the stage. Their style was on point. So were their dance moves. Damian's the one responsible for Guy's stage show. And he knows how to make sure they don't get upstaged again.
I said, look, man. These guys are killing us. We must, because we came on right before New Edition came on. So I would have an A show and a B show that I created for Guy. Me and my dancers is the thing that made the show either greater or the greatest. And I said, I got something for the ass. I'm telling you, I got something for the ass, dog. Aaron, all I need you to do is sing like never before. And Teddy played a shit out of that vocoder. You know, that's when he had the keytar where you could walk around with it, right? I said, just do what you got to do. Trust me, the lights, when we boom, 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 I got the rest.
And when they go on.
Man. Woo. Aaron did a. Yeah, but he, oh my God. I was like, what? And Teddy was, and he bent back. And then I came in and we were doing shit with these baseball caps. And we were doing all kind of different moves. And I was doing splits and jumping up on the speaker.
Damian checks out a few members of New Edition. Who's watching from the wings?
We killed them cats. They were on the side, like, crying, like, oh, my God, I think they got us. Like, you saw, you know, you give that uppercut and that left hook and then that straight right, that's what that was. I was like, boom, pow, boom. It was done.
The guys are thrilled because they crushed it tonight. And backstage, after the show, they're hanging out with their manager, Jane Griffin, when they get an important visitor.
It was Al Heyman, who ran the Budweiser Fest. I never forget, came into our room. He had New Edition's manager in there. He said, Gene, this tour is now co-headline and Guy's primary headline. Yep, there we go. Thank you very much. We dethroned the kings.
It's a triumph for Guy. But that decision to make both groups co-headliners is going to put them on a collision course.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From Wondery and Universal Music Group, I'm Taraji P. Henson, and this is Jacked.
The new Jack Swing. Yes, it's something funky that you can cling. All you gotta do is come on and sing. One, two, three. I made the new Jack Swing.
This is episode 5, Superfest. July 1989, the Los Angeles Coliseum. It's a massive stadium. Looks like something out of Roman gladiator days. The first Super Bowl took place here and the Olympics. And today, it's brimming with 41,000 rap and R&B fans about to bear witness to another competition. Hanging out backstage is Timmy Gatling. Impeccably dressed, as always, hair buzzed in a short trim fade. If things had gone differently, he would have been getting ready to go on stage right now with the band he founded. But instead, he got kicked out of Guy a year ago, and he's had to watch the rise of Guy from the sidelines. The number one debut album, Showtime at the Apollo, the Arsenio Hall show. It's been hard, really hard.
My heart was too broken. I was ripped to shreds.
And when he first got that call from Gene that he was out of the group, he thought his career was over. But in the years since, Timmy's managed to get back on his feet thanks to a lot of help from his now wife, Veronica.
God always makes a way.
She told him,
"You're still a writer. You're still a producer. You're still a musician. This is still your life's work. And if it's for you, they don't have the power to take it away."
They made a list of companies putting out New Jack Swing records, of connections, of potential collaborators to work with, of song ideas.
It didn't create a balm of ease for his soul for Guy. That was still a huge point of pain. It was a pain body for him for many, many years.
But Timmy gets a record deal with Tommy Boy Records, the label that almost signed Guy.
When he got the productions and got his own record deal, it helped a lot.
So by the time the 89 Superfest tour rolls around, Timmy's successfully writing and producing songs for other artists. He's even got a solo album in the works. And while he may not be performing at Superfest, he's in the game enough to be invited backstage that day. So he gets busy networking, you know, pressing the flesh with everyone from Superfest promoter Al Haymon to one of the tour's bodyguards, an imposing former college football player named Suge Knight.
Because I'm right there with the big thing around my neck backstage with Suge Knight, when Suge Knight wasn't Suge Knight, when he's just a bodyguard for Al Haymon.
And then he sees them, his former group, Teddy and Aaron, with his replacement, Damien. They're riding in a golf cart on their way to the stage.
They saw me. At that time, they didn't even speak. It was like they were shocked. It was like they saw a ghost.
Timmy watches as they drive by. Their eyes meet, but no one says a word. They just drive on by. Guy gets on stage, and there's Timmy again. This time, he's watching his old band from the wings.
I had an out-of-body experience watching this. Because you hearing your songs, it takes you back to how y'all wrote the songs, where you were at in the hood in Teddy's living room.
The guys are wearing their same signature open chest red jumpsuits, Guy written in sparkling cursive on the back. Watching them sing lyrics he wrote, Timmy's in his feelings.
It was like you had this flashback of when y'all was little up until this point. And now they up on stage and you're not a part of it.
But then he and 41,000 people at the Coliseum noticed something strange. The music sounding weird. No, kind of bad. There's some kind of feedback, a distortion. The next day, the review in the LA Times will say that Guy's set suffered from a muddy sound system. But Timmy Gatling says he saw what caused the issue. And it wasn't an accident.
Guy was going up on stage and somebody kept pulling the cords up from, from the microphones and the keyboard.
As Timmy stands there, it dawns on him. He's watching deliberate sabotage.
So they would run behind while the performance going on, kick it and just run across real quick. They kicking the cords out of the wall.
But who is they? Timmy says the ones kicking cords out of the wall are guys from New Edition stage crew. Because what had been a friendly rivalry seems like it's turning nastier. Rapper Kool Moe Dee's on the tour too. And as they go from show to show,
He can feel the tension building.
It was a little bit palpable because I guess New Edition is feeling like they were the OGs of the tour and Guy was being put in the headline position. And until Guy, New Edition has always been that hot teenage group, so to speak. But Guy had gotten a hold on what I considered that teen market. And they were easily the number one group at the time. And I know it wasn't jealousy, especially, but it's just a little uncomfortable when you're used to the fanfare that they had. They now had to split that fanfare because Guy definitely took a chunk out of that space.
But Damien Hall says it went further than just discomfort.
Look, we all was young. I think there was a jealousy, there was a hurt, there was a what the fuck, who are these guys taking up, you know, coming on our tour and co-headlining, then headlining the tour. They was out years before. They came out, what, 82, 83? So when you talk about being on top that long, and for us to come out after a year, it wasn't even a whole year. It took 9 months, and we were like, everybody around the world was like, this is the shit group, this is the group, Guy is the shit.
But if you ask New Edition's Johnny Gill, he denies it.
A rivalry? No. I mean, I think maybe they did. But for us, that was never even a thought process, because our presentation was just on a different level.
Johnny says if there was something going on, it was the other groups trying to compete with them.
Maybe it was we set the bar, and obviously when you set the bar high, people are always looking, going, I'm gunning for you, coming to get you. But something about when New Edition steps on the stage, there's an explosion like no other, and it's always set us apart from everybody.
Kool Moe Dee says that night after night, Guy's closing the gap.
I would see quantum leaps in terms of their performance because they had ballads now. It was at one time they're just performing because they got Groovy. That's the hit record everybody knows. But then when they have Let's Chill and other big R&B ballads or whatever, they're a solid, solid group at the time, and their show matched what their hit record level was.
One of those ballads gives them a chance to bring out a secret weapon, the beautiful voice of Marsha McClurkin. Each night, she comes on stage to sing a duet with Aaron Hall on Goodbye Love.
Aaron sings it. Even though I hate to leave, girl, and I cry as you walk out the door. And then I would come in, the door, I cried.
But we've been through the same thing before.
It's a song about a couple who's forced to part ways. Both of them wonder if they'll ever see each other again. Marsha knows the feeling. In fact, she's in exactly that situation right now with her Teddy, who's ironically standing like a few feet from her. Guy's manager, Gene Griffin, has forbidden dating between musicians on his roster. So whenever Gene's there, she and Teddy have to pretend like there's nothing going on. It's just one way for her, that the tour's feeling less and less like a party.
I, most of the time, was the only girl on the road with, like, all guys, and that was traumatic. I can't tell you how many times I was changing clothes or whatever, and they would just open up the door and, like, stand there. A lot of times, they didn't accommodate for me, so I would have to dress, like, in, like, a closet, or it was rough.
But sometimes, she and Teddy managed to sneak some alone time together.
I think we would just sneak into each other's rooms, and I would have the security. I would pay my security a little extra money to just keep things quiet and get me where I need to go. You know, in the morning, wake me up so I can be back in my room. So if Gene called, I'm there.
Mostly, Marsha's on her own.
Being the only girl, I was very much isolated. I had one guy, the bodyguard, that always kind of like, you know, even at my hotel, like he was outside or, you know, close by. So I was, you know, in passing, I would see everyone. We would sometimes eat together, but I stayed in my room a lot. I really did. Yeah, it was a lonely world.
After the West Coast swing, the Superfest acts get a few days off as the tour moves back to the East Coast. Next stop, Greensboro, North Carolina. Marsha has a cousin who lives nearby in Charlotte. She's so ready to get off of this tour. And she figures this is the perfect opportunity.
I stayed behind to spend time with my family. I had not seen my parents or my younger sister in a while, so I decided to stay behind, and that's what I did.
And as it turns out, Marsha's leaving just at the right moment. Because at the next show in Greensboro, the rivalry that's been building is gonna turn violent.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone, and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Greensboro, North Carolina, July 8th, 1989. A hot day has given way to a pleasant, balmy southern night. Cool Moldy takes up his regular position in the wings, stage right, to watch Guy set for the night. And the vibe backstage is less than pleasant. Guy has recently been anointed the main headliners, but for tonight, they're told late that they're going on before New Edition, which is a slap in the face.
Most of the time, Guy was closing, but then there were certain cities that New Edition would have to close regardless. Like, they're just, the fanfare is too much. And they changed the order one time because New Edition had to close in North Carolina. And instead of us communicating with each other, which is, again, the industry separates us and makes us compete instead of collabing with each other for the most part, they never had the conversation that in certain cities, we're going to have to close as opposed to you closing and just take everybody's ego out of the equation.
Instead, everybody's egos are totally in the equation, especially the band's roadies, because they are ready to fight for their bosses. Guy takes the stage. Just as a phone rings in Johnny Gill's hotel room, Johnny's still getting dressed for New Edition's gig. He's about to get picked up and hustled over to the Coliseum to go on after Guy.
We got a phone call from our stage manager saying that there was an issue going on with their stage people and security and ours. And what happened was, on that show, they had a revolving stage. So the revolving stage is, while the other act is in front, the other act is in the back setting up.
Except when New Edition's crew starts setting up on the back half of the stage during Guy's set, Guy's crew takes it as a sign of disrespect. So the two crews start fighting.
We was like, at that point, we was like, hey, whoa, 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 whoa. We can't do that. Can't allow that.
Kumo D is watching the two crews going at it when Johnny Gill and the rest of New Edition arrive on the scene.
New Edition gets the word of it backstage. Oh, they're disrespecting us. They kicked our stuff on stage.
So we went and got out and went walking right straight onto the stage. We was like, hey, you know, we need to have a conversation here. This, you know, it's unacceptable, and especially if you're not as a headliner. And that's when, you know, all hell broke loose.
Damien Hall hadn't seen any of it. He says he's in the middle of his performance when he's suddenly blindsided.
And we didn't know what we were doing because our backs were turned. So we was really into our zone. When we was on stage, New Edition came out on our show. They came out on our show, and we was like, what the hell is this?
For a second, Damien actually thinks New Edition's joining them on stage to play a song together. That's what the audience thinks, too.
First, it was exciting thinking we all coming out joining the group, joining Guy. But we was coming out going, yo, yo, hey, yo, y'all got to come back here. We got a problem out here. So the audience screaming and excited and thinking, oh my God, and the headline is coming up now.
And then we turned around, it was there, and it was like, first we was like, oh, okay, cool. Then people started screaming, and then it got hostile.
Cool Moe Dee watches as Teddy Riley and New Edition's Ricky Bell quietly step back into the wings, while everyone else goes to war.
Monty Devo swinging a mic stand. Aaron Hall and Michael Bivins are squaring off with their hands up in boxing stances, and Johnny Gill is swinging the microphone also, so just like Damien is. The audience is excited when they come out. They're screaming because they think they're going to do something together, and then they realize they're actually fighting, and then they start to boo everybody.
And then our security came out, took us off the stage, and then I was like, what the hell is this? This is crazy.
The day after the brawl in Greensboro,
I think it's just artist ego.
Cool Moe Dee can't get out of his head what he saw.
Who's the headliner? Whose name's up bigger in lights? Who's the name that people are coming to? You know, it's just the stupid stuff we get pit against each other for. I was like, this is bad. This is at the beginning of our tour, and I thought this is going to get the tour canceled.
But for now, the tour soldiers on, and tensions keep running hotter. Next stop, the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh. The acts check into their hotels to relax, except Guy, who got a late start from Greensboro. They're still on the road. The roadies get to work setting up the show at that night's venue. Last night's brawl seems to be forgotten, for now. Around 4:30 that afternoon, New Edition's stage manager goes to the venue to do a sound check. His name is Michael Clark, but everyone calls him Spider.
Spider was the guy that every day, if you knew one person who loved their job and enjoyed their job, it was Spider. Oh my God, the sweetest of the sweetest.
Spider needs to check something with his boss, New Edition's production manager, Ronald Byrd. So he walks through the backstage area towards the production office when something hits him in the back of his head and he's down.
And they beat Spider, and you know, they jumped him, but it was like some West Side Story warrior stuff where they came with chains and bats and sticks or whatever.
A group of guys, unclear where they came from, rain down blows on Spider till he loses consciousness. But before he passes out, Spider hears one of them say, "You fuck with Guy, we're gonna kill you." When New Edition's production manager, Ronald Byrd, comes out of the office, the men with bats attack him too.
Ron Byrd, he is the no-nonsense guy. Ron has a black belt, so you go from there.
Byrd takes several bats to the head and shoulders, but he fights back, escapes, and then somehow he gets himself a gun, a .380 caliber semi-automatic pistol. Byrd later says the gun fell out of the waistband of one of his attackers. Johnny Gill, here's a different story.
I was told he was able to get to his bus, because he's a cowboy, to get a hold to his weapons. Because, you know, on the road, you just don't know what you're going to run into.
Wherever the gun comes from, Byrd now has it out, and he's flashing it at his attackers. The gang drops their bats and makes a run for it. Byrd gives chase out of the arena and onto the street, towards the hotel where many of the Superfest acts are staying, the Hyatt House. At that very moment, Cool Moe Dee is in the hotel lobby talking to Michael Bivins, one of the members of New Edition, about what went down last night.
I'm talking to Michael Bivins about what happened, why did you do that, blah, 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 what went wrong, and he tells me they've been disrespecting us all year or all tour, blah, blah, blah.
Just then, across the street, there's a commotion. Cool Moe Dee sees a group of guys coming down the street from the arena.
And the guys start running, and as they're running, they shoot one guy in the back. Well, the guy that got shot in the back comes into the hotel. He falls out in the lobby.
A big guy in a white T-shirt and white Bermuda shorts, now stained with blood. And as he falls to the carpet, Cool Moe Dee realizes he recognizes him. It's Big Anthony B, Teddy Riley's old friend from the Harlem car wash.
I use his Jeep on the cover of How You Like Me Now. And it's like, that's it, I'm getting out of here.
As a crowd gathers around the body in the lobby, Cool Moe Dee races up to his room to gather his things.
And I call my crew, say, everybody get downstairs, get on the buses, we're getting out of here. So we're rounding ourselves up and getting out, and sure enough, the police cars come from Pittsburgh. They surround the buses, and as I'm on the bus getting ready to pull out, the policeman comes in front and says, nobody's going anywhere. This is now a murder scene. Everybody has to stay.
Upstairs, Johnny Gill from New Edition is watching this scene unfold from his hotel window.
It was a bunch of chaos going on across the street where we were staying, because you could look out the window and see them, see the building, and they were unloading. So hearing all the madness and then hearing that someone got shot and all that stuff, it was like, it became one of those moments where it was like, this don't even seem like it's real. It's surreal.
Now, while all this is happening, the members of Guy aren't even in Pittsburgh yet. They're still on the road in their tour bus, and they don't know yet what's going on. When they finally arrive, Teddy looks out the window onto a scene of total pandemonium.
The actual front of the hotel, it was all blocked in with police cars, ambulance, firemen, you know, everything. It was just so cluttered. So we went around the back and they took us straight up to our rooms. They had hotel security meet us. When we went up to the rooms, we turned on the TV and it was the news.
Only then does Teddy learn what happened. That a member of Guy's security crew was shot and died in the hotel lobby. And not just any member.
And they said his name was Tony Anthony B. You know, Tony B. And that's when I knew it was my guy.
Anthony B. The big guy in the Bermuda shorts. One of the guys involved in the earlier brawl. And Teddy's old friend from the streetcar wash in Harlem. And not just his friend, his protector. A guy who kept him off the streets.
Like, he bought me a keyboard, you know, or he would just get something to make sure I'm taken care of. Like, if I'm at the studio, he would take me down to the studio. Like, he was just that guy, you know, he was just like that brother for me.
Anthony had always looked out for Teddy. And now, the idea that Big Anthony is gone? Teddy almost can't process it.
I was out of it. I was like, this can't be true. You know, you have that look of this can't be true.
The show that night is canceled. Police arrest Bird and three of the men who attacked him and Spider Clark. And then they bust a fifth man charged with ordering the attack. Gene Griffin.
Gene was behind it, from what I was told.
That's what Johnny Gill says. But if you ask T.C. Tompkins, vice president of GR Productions, whether Gene was involved in the attack?
No, don't know. Did not get involved.
But T.C. does get involved in the damage control after the fact.
No, I just told Gene I didn't want him talking to nobody. You know, I basically told everybody don't say anything to nobody about anything. The less we know about it, the less we said, the best it is about it.
That's not to say everything coming out of GR is no comment. To any reporters who ask, TC describes Anthony and the other attackers as professional people we hired for security. But to be honest, not too many people in the press pay attention.
We only took a few calls. You know, nobody was really that interested. You know, it's just another black kid getting murdered. You know, it wasn't a major story.
But for Damien and the other members of Guy, yeah, this is major.
It messed up something that was could have been real beautiful for us. And I think it changed all of us for a while. That day changed the dynamic of a lot of things.
For one thing, the whole argument about which group was better or which group was headlining, it's over. Guy and New Edition are both dropped from the Superfest tour.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.
Manhattan. In the second floor offices of GR Productions, the mood is grim. Guy getting dropped from the Superfest tour has dealt the company a major financial blow. Gene's facing charges for allegedly ordering the beatdown of New Edition's road crew. Two of the guys who attacked Ronald Byrd get 2.5 to 6 years for aggravated assault. Byrd himself will get 5 to 10 years for voluntary manslaughter for killing Anthony B. Gene manages to get his charges dropped for lack of evidence, so he may have evaded the law. But he's got another problem. Teddy Riley is mourning the loss of his dear friend, Anthony B., and it's sending him into an emotional tailspin.
Because it's really painful just, you know, knowing that you've lost someone that's pretty dear to you and you're successful and you want that person to be there, you know.
T.C. Tompkins can see how much pain Teddy's in.
He was hurt. You know, it was tragic to him. He was emotionally upset. He cried. A lot of the kids cried because he was, you know, everybody liked him.
Marsha McClurkin sees the grief too, and the guilt.
He just said, I wish I had never had him as, you know, my bodyguard or out on the road. Maybe he would still, you know, be here if that had not happened. Like he really carried that one like on his shoulders. You know, it was tragic that he felt that way because, like I told him, it's not your fault, but that's how he felt.
Damien remembers feeling something else from Teddy. Resentment.
The death of Anthony hurt him tremendously. To the point where he'll tell people that me and Aaron did, you know, we didn't care or didn't do it. And I'm like, that's not true. So I leave that as he was distraught and he fostered that in his mind in some kind of capacity. That wasn't the truth.
Meanwhile, though, Damien and Aaron start building up resentments of their own about how Teddy seems to be getting more and more of the spotlight. That summer sees the release of Spike Lee's era-defining movie, Do the Right Thing. On the soundtrack is a guy number called My Fantasy. But the credits say, Teddy Riley featuring Guy.
Going into the end of 89, that's when you really started, because that's when they started separating Teddy from us. Doing the second album is more so, you know, Guy featuring Teddy Riley and on the remixes of Fantasy and the remixes of Teddy's Jam. It was Guy featuring Teddy Riley, and I was like, me and Gene used to always, you know, butt heads on that, because I said, that don't make sense. You can't feature somebody in the group. That's the dumbest shit on the fucking planet.
In some ways, this is nothing new. Almost from the beginning, Teddy Riley's been more famous than his own group. On TV, the band's always getting introduced like,
you can't get much hotter than Teddy Riley, the producer, written behind, you know, Keith Sweat, I Wanna, and just got paid by Johnny Kemp. And now Teddy's put together his own band.
Not too long ago, a gentleman by the name of Teddy Riley masterminded a concept called Guy.
But Teddy getting featured credits on Guy tracks? Somehow it feels like a step too far. And Teddy senses the shade.
It was just a lot of jealousy. It's a lot of jealousy because of what I do, you know, and because I'm the quietest and I get the shine, you know, but it's from the seeds that I planted. You never planted a seed.
Marsha sees Teddy withdrawing. He comes around the GR offices less and less.
Teddy was pretty much like dodging everybody.
Until it seems like he's unable to trust anyone, including Marsha herself. One night at her apartment, Teddy brings up the credit card they share, the one she added Teddy to when they started dating.
I think he had a meeting with his accountant, Bert Patel.
Marsha has one simple rule for the card. Every month, she sends Teddy's charges to Bert, who pays them off. But apparently, the accountant doesn't trust her.
And I think Bert Patel was like, well, maybe you need to find out more about, you know, her. I know she sends in the credit card thing here to be paid, but, you know, maybe, you know, there's a way that she's taking funds off of it or something. I don't know what it was, but he had the audacity to repeat it to me. And when he did, I kind of lost it.
Marsha and Teddy hardly ever argue, but this one is a blowout.
I said, are you insinuating that I'm taking something from you? Is that what you're saying? And I was just so hurt and so disappointed that he even thought that. And I was like, you know what? I tell you what, don't even worry about it. I was like, because one day you're going to see really who's taking from you. You'll see it.
Jean, that's who she's referring to. But if Teddy knows what she's getting at, he doesn't even acknowledge it.
So I was just like, okay, you know what? That's it. I'm done.
That's it. Their relationship is over. If Teddy's acting a little suspicious, though, it kind of makes sense because he's starting to realize that a lot of other people around him are getting very, very rich off his work. T.C. Tompkins, who worked at GR Productions, remembers.
They were making big money. Matter of fact, I think our billing for the first year of GR production was something like $25 million.
When T.C. says billing, he means that's how much the production company is billing other people.
That's how much we were making. That's how much they made that first year when we had our offices, we made $25 million.
And according to journalist Barry Michael Cooper, it's an open secret in the industry that Teddy isn't getting his fair share.
This dude should have been a multi-millionaire at the height of what he was doing because the head guy at Black Music at MCA, he was telling people, if it doesn't have the Teddy Riley sound, don't bring it to me.
So it may be more than a coincidence that around this time, Gene tries to show Teddy some gratitude and pull him even closer to him. As Christmas 1989 approaches, Teddy Riley and his mom are moving into a house in Duluth, Georgia.
Duluth, you know, is racist then.
Duluth's about 25 miles outside of Atlanta, and especially back then, it's a pretty white town.
You know, it's like Duluth was like, whoa, why are you living up there? People were asking me, why are you living in Duluth?
Good question. Gene suddenly decided to up and relocate himself and his business operations to Atlanta from New York. Maybe after the brawl at Superfest and the implications he was involved, he's looking for a fresh start. But whatever the reason, Gene takes the members of Guy with him. He offers them all free homes in Duluth.
He had said he bought three houses for us. One for me, one for Damien, and one for Aaron. I moved in mine first, and it's so funny. We got smaller houses, and he got a doggone house that looked like the White House, but it was brown. I was like, wow. It had bricks. We had stucco. I was like, okay.
So even though Teddy's starting to get how much money he's making for GR, he doesn't actually have much of his own. His money's still largely channeled through the company. Whenever he needs something, it's paid for by Gene in cash, or Teddy uses a company card.
And one day, we were shopping for the house. We were shopping on the Furniture Mall off of Jimmy Carter Boulevard in Atlanta. So we went there, and me and Mom shopping, and we had, you know, just everything that we needed to get our furniture home so that we can, you know, start living in the house with something. Because we were living on blow-up beds. So we did that, and the card just kept declining. I called Gene, and I said, Gene, is it true that we have a lot of money, right? He said, yeah, but you got to call me, man, and let me know when you're charging the card. I was like, I got to call you to let you know I'm charging the card?
Teddy's mom raises an eyebrow. The Rileys' suspicions are officially aroused. Teddy decides it's time to look deeper into his financial situation, starting with the deed of the new house Gene's given him. According to Teddy, it turns out,
you know, we had moved down to Atlanta where he bought us, not knowing that I was squatting because he didn't really purchase the house. His brother, his blood brother, basically gave him the house and said, you guys can live in there until I sell it. He gave us fake deeds.
Fake deeds to the house. Teddy says Gene doesn't even own them. Now, Mrs. Riley raises more than her eyebrow and gives her some motherly advice about his longtime manager.
And she said, "You better leave that asshole. Leave him or I'm going back to the projects."
Teddy's getting fed up with Gene, too. But can he really just up and leave? For one thing, Teddy's helped sign a bunch of acts to their company, Marsha's group Abstract, and his little brother Markel's hip-hop crew, Rex in Effect. He can't just leave them behind. He doesn't want to leave Guy behind either. But contractually, Gene is still a fourth member of that group. Teddy may be ready to split from Gene, but it isn't going to be easy. He's always been the quiet kid who lets other people handle his business. But now, it's time to take control of his own career.
And he was like, "Well, I don't know. I got my whole family, and I need to move. I need to move now. I got to make some moves. You know, I feel like I'm in danger."
That's on the next and final episode of Jacked. From Wondery and Universal Music Group, this is episode 5 of 6 of Jacked. If you want to help us spread the word, please give us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to binge ad-free. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. Please support them. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey. Jacked is hosted and produced by me, Taraji P. Henson. Andy Herman and Rico Galliano wrote and produced this story. Consulting creative producer is Timmy Gatling. Associate producer is Melissa Duenez. Fact-checking by Sarah McClure. Consulting producer is Barry Michael Cooper. Managing producer is Lutha Pandya. Sound design by Marcelino Villalpando. Sound design and mixing by Jeff Schmidt. Executive produced by Barrick Moffitt and Daniel Seliger for UMG. Executive produced by George Lavender, Marsha Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Jacked ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Reyes Sehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.